Hi, and welcome to the Red Tunic Podcast, a podcast where I look to rediscover what makes gaming fun and enjoyable by having positive conversations with those related to the industry. My name is Link, and today I'm joined by Robert N. Brown, Game Director and Lead Programmer on Kingpin Reloaded. Hi, Robert. How are you doing today?
Hi, Link. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It is a Saturday morning at 8 a.m., which, you know, in most cases is a time that does not exist to me on the weekend, but, you know, it's a good day. Actually, I shouldn't say that. The sun is hiding behind a bunch of clouds, so we're yet to see if it's a good day. Hopefully it is a good day. How's the day for you, I should ask? You know, you're a little further into it. I think it's noonish for you. I think you know if your day is going to be good. I'm rambling in a weird way. How is your day going so far? There we go.
Well, my day here in Scotland is, it's just come up for 1 p.m. and the sun has actually just came out from behind the clouds. Scotland is one of these countries where summer is, if you're lucky, you'll get maybe a couple of weeks of really warm days, and then there's a lot of rain and things. And once you hit autumn and then into winter, it's not very nice at all. But it's a nice country. I mean, there's lots of nice scenery. So not that I'm going to see much today because I'm going to be doing work and stuff after this. So, but yeah, it's a good day so far.
Well, that's good that it's been good so far. And, you know, I can relate to, in a way, I can relate to, you know, your summer just being a few good weeks. You know, one of the things for Canada, my part at least, is the joke that summer for us is, you know, very short-lived. And unfortunately, that short-lived summer for us has been getting worse in the sense of hot, humid heat. But, you know, it's now like second-ish week of September as of recording this, and we are seemingly out of the humidity and into the cold. So I think winter's right around the corner for me is basically what I'm getting to.
Well, yes, I mean, it's we are in La Nina cycle just now, so we are liable to get kind of warmer and wetter weather.
Always something to keep in mind, I suppose. Yeah. So, Robert, before we get started, would you mind would you mind saying a little bit about yourself? You know, like, obviously you said you're in Scotland, but, you know, like, who else you are, what else, you know, what have you, just before we get started, so everyone kind of has a baseline of who Robert is.
Well, that's a tough one. I wasn't prepared for this one. I will say that I am a more mature male. I have been around on this planet for quite a while. Not as long as you'd think, though. My brain is still 25 years old, but my body is struggling at the moment with not being 25 anymore. I have been programming, I suppose, since I was very young. I started off really with an Atari 2600, and I wanted to know how the games worked. So I got a ZX81, and I learned to program BASIC on that. And that has been my hobby ever since. And that, I suppose, it kind of defines me, because it's always been a hobby that I've had. But now I am getting paid to do the thing that I most enjoy. And, God, that's a tough question. Right, the first question's a tough one. apart from that, I am I live in Scotland. I did live in France for 12 years, which was a nice experience because it was much warmer than here for longer during the year. It was just beside Geneva, but now I am back, and now I work with Slipgate Ironworks / 3D Realms, and I think that's all I can think of at the moment. Something may pop into my head shortly, but you never know.
And, you know, that's perfectly fine. And, you know, as someone that is at this moment 35, I can definitely relate to the mindset of your brain feeling younger and your body in being in a stark disagreement with it. You know, for me, my knees are finding ways to kill themselves. And you know, like anyone else who's, I think, getting a little older, you can probably relate to this as well, where you sleep in, you know, one off position and your back is out for like a month. You know, so I can definitely relate to the whole brain wanting to be younger and your body going, no, I'm sorry, you slept with your foot twisted the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to hurt for the next week and a half.
Yeah, I mean, one bad habit I seem to have got recently is I'll fall asleep in my computer chair. I'll just relax back and I think, I'll just think about this little bit of coding I'm working on. And then I'll close my eyes, I can visualize it better. And then I find it's like 4 in the morning and it's starting to get cold here. So it's kind of warm in the evening in the house, but once, you know, there's no heating on during the night and the windows are open, so the Scottish weather starts to come in and it's a kind of rude awakening. And then it's, you know, why is my leg sore? Oh, it's because I put one leg up on another chair and one leg wasn't. And, you know, and I've been sitting in my tailbone, so I need to gingerly get up without waking my daughter up, so.
You know, yes, as I said, I can definitely relate to those feelings. And it sucks because, you know, 10, 15 years ago or what have you, that would have probably been fine for you. But now, you know, you're going to hurt for a day or so because of that, right?
Yeah. But on the bright side, it's, I mean, when I go into a pub, I don't have to show any ID. I can go into like a supermarket and buy alcohol and you know, nobody mentions it. It's, so there's that advantage. I mean, there's also advantage that, I mean, I can drive a car, you know, I've got my license, I can, you know, do all these things that, you know, people that are below 18 or probably even younger, and or I think there's a 21 some laws in America, maybe same in Canada. I mean, you can't even illegally have a drink under 21. It's, you know, there's these little things that they may be disadvantages, but really overall, you know, having sore knees or a sore back because I fell asleep in a funny way is it's not that much of a disadvantage, where if I just make sure I stop falling asleep in my chair, then I won't have the sore back or the sore knees, and I can still drive my car and still not get carded in a pub.
You know, that is a probably a good perspective to have, that, you know, you still you'll take the sore back at the advantages of actually being an adult. You know, that's a good perspective to have.
Plus, there's nothing I can do about it anyway, so I mean, I might as well just enjoy it. Enjoy the ride, and it's going to be over one of these days, so you never know, so enjoy it while it's there.
You know, that is also a very good point. You know, we're here for a short time, might as well make it fun, right?
Yeah. And the funner, the better. Is that a word? Does funner even exist? The more fun, the better. Get my grammar correctly.
You know, I'm... Far be it from me to be a, you know, policing grammar, but, you know, I don't know if it's a funner is a word, but we'll pretend it is regardless.
Yeah, if it isn't, then I'm claiming trademark on it, and all payments can be made via. I'll post my bank details somewhere. Actually, I won't.
We'll find you a PayPal.
Yeah. Well, I do take crypto as well, mind you.
So, what I can do. Rob, sorry?
I can do, if necessary.
So, Robert, you did mention, you know, that the first thing that you started with was the ZX1 because of getting into the Atari 2600. So, obviously, I'm going to presume that would be how you got into developing and making games. But can you speak to that a little more as to, like, you know, maybe what was it about the Atari 2600, or, you know, what was it about you being younger that made you be like, this is what I want to try and do?
Well, I think initially it would stem from the fact that I like to know how things work. I mean, I remember from, now this is going to really give away my age, when I was young, you know, not like a baby, but under 10, there was a lot of old televisions getting thrown out in the UK because they've changed over from the 405 line system onto 625. So every so often on your travels round about the local area, you'd find a dumped television. It's like, what are these things inside here? So it's, I mean, a lot, you know, the Valve TV, so it's like, how does this Valve work? You know, it's, you know, what's a capacitor do? And it's that kind of, that got me into the hobby of electronics. But the other thing is how I wanted to know how things work was, how do these games work on the Atari? I mean, I didn't know at the time they had a processor and, you know, a video chip and these kind of things. I thought, you know, you plug the cartridge in and something magical happens that gives you this other game that cost an insane amount of money way back then. And that led me on to, you know, whatever computer magazines at the time, you would then find out pieces of information. Well, here's it's a software that's then held on a ROM, and then it connects to a processor, and there's an address bus here. You learn these things over time, and it's like, oh, I want to do that. Because I like to know how things work, and I want to learn. So that when I got the ZX81, the first game I wrote was a clone of one of these handheld fluorescent Space Invaders games, which I've since lost the source code, which is quite annoying. But that was the first game I ever wrote. And then went on to a Commodore 64, then on to Amiga, and then on to the PC. And it just went on and on over the years until where I am now.
So, you know, thank you for sharing that. And I'm curious, when you were doing, like, through this journey, did, you know, was there any formal's probably not the right word. Is this the path you followed through school, or did you kind of do other things and then wind up back with games?
Well, through school, I wanted to be a programmer, but I more wanted to be an electronic engineer. But then, like, life gets in the way. It's like, as a teenager, you discover, you know, the opposite sex, these kind of things. And you get distracted, and then you enjoy your life, you get older, then you can then, you know, spend more time with your friends, you go and have the, you get into pubs and, you know, nightclubs and things. But then, in between all that, there was a point where I thought, right, I want to go into a computing programming environment, so I need to get qualified for that. So I went back and did a bachelor's degree in computing science. So that allowed me to then move into the corporate world and do programming. I was a programmer analyst for a large multinational for a few years. And then the game programming was always there as a hobby. And I learned, you know, like, it used to be, I started off in Pascal on the PC, and I would do assembly language and Turbo Pascal, you know, writing, you know, basically 16-bit games. And then moved on to, like, C, C++, these kind of things. And while I was in France, that was my primary hobby, because I was, I actually left my job to move to France with my wife, and then we had a child, and then I was the house husband. So I was then still practicing learning DirectX, you know, DirectX 9, 10, 11, you know, these kind of things. So then how did it happen? It happened one night when I was on Discord, and Kingpin had just been announced, and I had an engine that I wrote, and I showed it, and then I was interviewed by 3D Realms, and then I am where I am now. So that was the kind of path, but the plan was there, obviously I'd like to get into gaming and be a game programmer, but it wasn't specifically planned. It was I would love to do this, but will it happen? And then it did.
So thank you for sharing that. That's a really interesting, you know, a really interesting journey, path, story. Because you know, I've spoken to a few people where they've kind of had something, and they, you know, they managed to be kind of in the right place at the right time to show their thing and get some attention. And that's really interesting that, you know, you went from a hobbyist, I'm going to say, you know, doing normal programming, boring programming, maybe. I'm a boring programmer, so the not fun stuff. And, you know, with a hobby project or what have you that you showed off, you know, just on a whim when something came out. And, you know, next thing you know, you are the game director and lead programmer for that thing that you're like, well, I have this thing that might work. So, you know, thank you for sharing that because that's interesting to hear. Now, in that same vein, Robert, do you have any words of wisdom that you can share from your experiences for anyone that might be maybe in the same position that wants to go the same path?
Well, there are a couple of pieces of advice I would give. I'll say this as part of a little anecdote. When I was at school doing my maths and, you know, which involves algebra, geometry, trigonometry, these kind of things, I thought, I'm never going to need these. Even for electronic engineering, which I say I really wanted to do primarily at that point, it was, I mean, I know how to add numbers, you know, I can work out, you know, resistor networks and things, so that's, I don't need trigonometry for that. But now it's all maths, because I do a lot of my shader programming myself, and, you know, I do a lot of algorithms. I don't rely on, like, things like Unity and Unreal Engine to do these things for me. I do them myself because I've learned that over the years. So doing your mathematics and sticking to all disciplines is really important. You may not think you're going to need it, but you do need it, and you should concentrate on it. And also getting the professional qualification. See, I've got a bachelor's degree. That means I can say I have proven that I have, what's the way, that the stamina and the knowledge to be able to be in this line of work, you know, with the, because I did neural networks and things as part of my degree. So there is a lot of programming there. There's a lot of algorithmic work there, a lot of mathematics there. So the other thing I would say would be, you have to stick at it. You can't just pick up an engine and say, I'll just throw in everybody else's work and get something working. You know, you need to, sometimes you really need to know what you're doing. And I'd say that involves maths, knowledge, DirectX, you know, OpenGL, if, you know, if that's your flavour. Then learning something and sticking at it and continuing to learn is something that you really need to stick at. You can't just say, I've got a job in gaming and that's it. You need to continue to learn constantly. So you need, what's the word I'm looking for? Staying power. I think you need to, there's another word in the tip of my tongue for that, but I'm sure the listeners will know what I mean. It's, you need to be able to stick at it.
So, you know, thank you for that, for those words of wisdom. And I understand what you're saying. And I, you know, I personally, like, can relate to a lot of what you said. I didn't focus on math. Luckily, what I do isn't math heavy in my normal day-to-day programming. However, it's, if, you know, based on what you're doing, the moment you start to get into some more complex things, or like algorithms or shaders especially, you know, that's an area where I wish I focused on math a little better for some of the things I do, or did at a previous job, because I was doing, how do I put it, overambitious and dumb things, where if I had been better with math, maybe those things would have worked better for me. And it wouldn't have been as, like, much brute forcing or what have you. As well, you know, speaking to qualifications that, well, you know, well, a lot of places, depending on what you're doing, qualifications can come in many different flavors. But having at least a piece of paper in some regards will often make people that put emphasis on that look at you better or look at you differently, right?
Yeah. I mean, even not even necessarily like a degree. I mean, there's a lot of computer qualifications out there that show that you have, you know, the resilience and the and you're really spending the time to make the effort to learn new things. So I think it's, I mean, it kind of shows a question of attitude as well. I mean, some people, you know, I'm just probably picking this out of thin air, but you could presume that some people would think, you know, I did a game in Game Maker or something like that, so therefore I know everything. You know, I know nothing, effectively, that, you know, I'm not the best programmer in the world, and I would never say that I was. I'm not constantly learning. So it's... But yeah, a bit of paper does show that you have made the effort and you have taken the time to learn something new.
Exactly, like the dedication, right? The yeah. As you put it, the staying power.
Yeah. Like dedication may have been the word I was looking for. Thanks for that.
No worries. There was one other thing I wanted to follow up on, but I can't remember in this moment what it was, so we won't worry about it, and if it comes back to me later, I might bring it back up. So I apologize if down the line I completely shoot something out of left field. That's a callback to here. Yeah, it just might shoot back into my head, and I might have the compulsion to throw it out the door and see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think maybe I shouldn't say so many anecdotes about here's what happened with my life. We'll just maybe get to the point next time.
Well, by all means, however you feel best explaining things, I'm not gonna turn my nose at an anecdote. So you're good.
Okay.
So, Robert, you mentioned that you started with the ZX Spectrum. And, you know, I'm presuming there was probably, you know, like you said, you moved on to doing different things, learning different technologies and what have you. What I'm getting to at this one, because, you know, we don't have to go back to how you got into developing. You know, you started with the ZX Spectrum, you said that, or the ZX1, sorry. Okay. Which might be the same thing. I don't know, because those were all UK things. We didn't really get them in North America.
The Timex TI, was it TI 1000? That was the equivalent of the ZX81, because it was Timex did the distribution of those. Sinclair invented the thing in the UK. So that's but I was always jealous because you get 2K of RAM and we only get 1K.
So. I can't speak much to that because I'm not going to lie. The home computer, the scene, I'll go with the scene or what have you. North America, all of those things were seemingly not as present when it came to like smaller personal computers. You know, in the early 90s, I would have been, I'm 35 now. So when I was like 5 or 6, so before Windows 95, the only people I saw with computers were either like the big DOS machines, like the actual big, you know, bigger machines with the 5 and whatever inch floppy drives. But like the full desktop ones, not the nice smaller compacted ones, or like Apples. And
yeah,
I think I only knew one person with an Apple. My school at the time had Apples. So like, I think we in North America largely missed the small computer, what have you, that like the UK got, that, you know, like Japan got and everything. Cause it's always like, and I've actually been jealous of that only from the standpoint of you guys had like so many options, and my memory, and you know, it just could have been because I was a small kid growing up in a smallish town. But my memory was the only thing we ever had of knowledge of, or what have you, was Apples, DOS machines, and consoles like a Nintendo or like a Sega or a Genesis, which I think was a Master System was the UK name. I can never remember what the equivalent name was, or what the one that came before the Genesis. I'm always shaky on that one. But either way, what I'm getting at is for you, you know, starting for the ZX One, was there a game that you played that made you go, oh, this is what, like, this is what I want to do? Like, was there a specific game, or was it kind of like a journey through where every now and then you'd come across a new game and your passion or your interest would be revitalized, and you'd be like, oh, this is what I want to keep trying to do, or what have you? And if there was, what was the game, or what were those games that made you want to be in the industry?
Well, there is one game that I always go back to, and I'll not actually go back and play. I always go back to in my mind when I say that there's a game that really, really inspired me. Now, this was on the Spectrum 48K, and it was a sequel to a game called Avalon. It was called Dragon Talk of Avalon, and it was third person 3D. Now, for the Spectrum, way back in the 80s, showing my age again, it seemed to be very advanced at the time, and they had this kind of AI in it where even parts of the world that you weren't in would continually run. So if you annoyed one of the characters, it would continue to be annoyed even if you moved on to a different area, then back again, because you could travel between areas. It was sort of open world, even though it had a path. But that was a game that I thought, wow, I'd really love to be able to do that. And it's also a game that I would actually like to remake, but somebody still owns the IP, so it's something I've never actually got round to doing. I've thought about trying to contact the company that owns the IP, but then, you know, it's at the moment I'm working full time on Kingpin and with the Slipgate Ironworks, so it's something that I would like to do. But that was the game that really thought, I want to do programming, and I want to do something like that. The ZX81, yes, I mean, although I wrote my first game on that, it was in BASIC, there was some assembly language, but the ZX81, and, you know, anybody that had a TI-1000 will know that the graphics were very blocky, there was not much you could do, you know, but this was, it was a real eye-opener at the time. And I thought, wow. That was the first game I went wow to.
So, you know, thank you for that. And, you know, I understand what you're saying about the, you know, if you'd want to work, you'd like to work on it, but like it's still kind of owned by someone. I think I want to say that I think there was even a game in the last 10 or 15 years for Avalon. But I only say that because I think it popped, or a game I have recently-ish has that name in the title, but who knows if it's an actual part of the series, because Avalon is a conceptual mythical place, so you know how that works, I don't know. I'm not an IP lawyer or what have you, but either way,
I think there's no trademark on the name, so I think anybody can use it because it is a public name.
Yeah, and so, you know, maybe once Kingpin's done, you could, how do I phrase this? You could annoy everyone above you at 3D Realms or Slipgate Ironworks to see if they might want to pick it up and let you do it, right? Like, you know, the squeaky wheel might get the grease in this case.
Well, I would look at the game first. It's more niche than what any games company would really want to pick up. I mean, this would be more a labour of love. But obviously, if I spent, let's say, a year doing it, I would like to get some return on that investment in time. So, but I don't think a studio would pick it up. No, once you see it, you'll know what I mean.
Fair enough. I'll take a look later and try and track down the older one, because I just did try and do a quick Google, but you know, Avalon has been used in a lot of game names, so I think it'll take a bit to find it easily. Mm. But you know, you're probably right. It might make a little more sense when I can actually put eyes on it and understand better what you'd be having to do, right?
Yeah.
But you know, the thing you said about how like it had a kind of persistent world, that's really interesting. That always has interested me about older games. Like, mm-hmm. When I started playing games, right, the ones I played didn't really have that. And it's always, like, shocking to me. And again, because I came up with consoles, right? So everything that, largely outside of, like, shareware on, like, a Windows 95 machine or what have you, it was going to be consoles, and none of that existed. So hearing, and as you know, as I've learned and hearing as I talk with people, the older games that had like all these wild features and like complex features that, you know, realistically make no sense to how they could have existed so well back then is always wild to me. Cause it's like, how, like, what kind of geniuses were there that were figuring out how to tap out all of this power from a system that was like maybe not in color, you know what I mean? Like, it's always a wild thing to me to hear that, you know, these older things were able to do these amazing feats, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's precisely why it was kind of wild to me. I've actually read, I don't know if it's still online, it was like years ago I read about it, and one of the actual writers of the game, he did not a blog, but he wrote a series of, you know, notes how they actually made this game. And, you know, they didn't have the tools at the time, so they, you know, they were doing like graphics on bits of graph paper and stuff, you know, the squared paper. And, you know, so these were like one bitmap graphics. And so they drew them all out, and then they load, you know, they, whatever way they got them into the machine. And, you know, this, a lot of the assembly language was done by hand. They didn't have, you know, proper assemblers and like IDEs like we have now. So, I mean, it's really amazing what they did. And it's an aspiration for me to be able to do something like that with those level of tools, although I don't need to now. But I would still like to do that game, you know, as I say, as a labour of love, and have it play as well as they had it playing. But obviously with better graphics and, you know, things like maybe radiosity, real-time lighting, you know, all the eye candy that you can get now and expand the world. So that, I mean, it wouldn't be limited to 48K, we'd have, you know, massive worlds. I mean, it's basically set in various parts of Britain, you know, way back in, you know, like prehistory times, like the time of King Arthur and things. So what you could do now would be, I think, would be amazing in the right hands. It's a niche game, so, but
yeah. And, you know, I wanna say, just because you mentioned like a assembler and people having to write in it, as someone who has brushed up against assembly, I'm a COBOL programmer, and, you know, for, I've mentioned this before a few times, and for anyone who doesn't know, COBOL is old as hell. Which is, you know, it's one of those weird things where when you first start it, you'll hate it, and then after you've done it for a few years, you're like, this is amazing, and you love it. But the people, I've never actually had to do assembler. I've seen it, I've ran away from it, it scares me. The people that do assembler, or were doing assembler way back then, that knew it, it's absolutely astonishing to me that, one, they were programming in assembler, and two, they were able to not go crazy. Actually, they probably did go crazy. They probably are very crazy. But they were able to stay largely publicly sane while doing assembler. And I think you especially in this scenario, I think you can understand exactly what I'm trying to say right there.
Yes. Yeah, assembly language is a completely different beast than, like, doing C++ in an IDE, especially back then. I mean, some of my Commodore 64 stuff was data statements, and I had to work out, I had to count the number of bytes in my branches and things like that, because I didn't have the proper tools to do it. So I presume that they had to do things like this as well. You know, your forward branches, your back branches, you know, where you don't have the nice thing where you can do you can define a structure like for all your player attributes and variables. You know, you have to remember what block of memory you've picked for that, and you know how many bytes for a score, how many bytes for health. You know, these kind of things. It's amazing what they did at the time.
Yes, and you know, and for anyone who hears that and is not exactly certain to a more nitty gritty level what Robert is meaning, you would have to directly address the memory bytes that you were coding in, and you had to know where they were, and you would know where they were because the more you worked with assembler in these systems, you would just know in your mind where this system stored those typical things in memory, which was insanity all on its own. But then you would have to like directly say, you know, memory address in hex, I'm presuming, or what have you, that like memory address 2AE3, you would then increment it by like what have you, like the amount of nitty gritty granular things you had to remember and keep track of, like you were saying, writing down, you know, doing all that, is just, it's absolutely mind blowing. And, you know, it's, so I know we're getting kind of off topic, but it's just like, you know, anytime assembler is mentioned, it's always just insanity to me that people were able to master it, because it is pure techno wizardry in my brain.
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing to learn, but then if you get to a certain level, then you can start to disassemble other programs. I mean, I know that there are programs just now out that will do like automatic decompilations for you, but there's nothing better than knowing exactly what each instruction does at what point, and you can say, right, these like 10 lines are equivalent to this line in C, which is already known that I had to do that for Kingpin. To disassemble the navigation system, so the first iteration is a perfect copy. Obviously, there's tweaks for reloaded, but the original version was like 99.99% accurate. And the only reason it wasn't 100% was because one of the routines uses a random number. So I'm very proud of that.
And, you know, I not to sound patronizing in any way, shape, or form. However, yeah, you definitely should be. Like, at the amount of work to reverse engineering something like that, and, like, you know, working back to redo it in modern or what have you, is also, like, an absolute insane feat. You know, like, I've personally had to reverse engineer things and redo them, but not to that level. And, you know, just doing it on a smaller level is very difficult. So, like, that, yeah, there, you should definitely be proud of that, because that's a huge feat to be able to go that like that in depth, right?
Yeah. It was good fun, though. It was difficult at times, but it was good fun. As a challenge, as a programmer, sometimes it's like, what's the way I would put it? Sometimes it's like I'm a sucker for punishment, but it means I'm really learning. I'm using what I've learned over the years, rather than let some program do a kind of, you know, a polite way to say, you know, it does its best, but you then still have to go in and fix it. So
yes, I understand what you're saying there. So, Robert, I am curious about this, and I don't know if the answer is largely going to be the same thing that we just talked about previously with in regards to Avalon. However, do you have a favorite game, maybe before or maybe more currently, I guess? And like, what is it about that game that makes you, you know, that makes you think so fondly of it? And again, if it's Avalon, that's fine. We've, you know, you can just say, we discussed it, move on, or what have you.
I mean, there are other games. I mean, see, that was the one that made me first go, wow, and really inspired me. But the games that I would call my favourites are the games I go back to if I want to relax, you know, because I know them, I can run through them quickly. I mean, recently I went through the whole BioShock series. I mean, I have that on PC and on Xbox, but sometimes it's nice that the in front of the TV is more comfortable than sitting in your computer chair and playing it. So I'll play right through that on the Xbox and, you know, maybe do it over the space of a couple of days. And that means I can just, I can take the time to relax from my coding, and it, it gives you time to like recharge, and it gives you the inspiration, like, that's what I want to add to my, that's what I want to add to a game, or that's, you know, I quite like that. I'll, you know, keep that in mind. You know, but I've also ran through the Metro games. I've not so recently, but I did buy the Orange Box on the Xbox, and I ran through all of the Half-Life 2 games. Half-Life 1, I don't know how many times I've completed that. Kingpin, that's still a favourite. And obviously I'm rewriting that, so that's has a special place in my heart for Kingpin. Because I've been playing that since almost its release, and I've written a number of mods for it as well, been involved in, I think it's like 4 mods now, and I've assisted with some others, given advice to other modders. And so I wouldn't say Kingpin is my favourite game. It is up there, but it's when you're dealing with it every single day, you want to play something else just for your sanity, which I like, obviously. Maybe that's not the right way to put it. More, if you see it every day and then you play it every day, it's not going to feel the same. So you go to somewhere else and enjoy a different game. And then when you come back to it, you have this, you're a wee bit fresher again, and you know what I mean? It's,
yes.
I'm kind of waffling on, but you get what I mean.
Yes, I 100% know what you mean. It's the looking at a problem, or looking at what have you, a project, I should say, with new fresh eyes, right? Like, it's, you know, if something isn't working for you, or you just can't figure out how you would like something to work out, or just what have you, you know, going away and letting your brain not think about it, like, focus on it primarily. And then when you come back to it, your brain will have rested, relaxed, and, you know, we'll have a better time. For me, like, you know, I do that a lot. And the problem I have, I don't know how common this is, but the problem I have is things that I never figured out, my brain will just keep churning away with. And then, like, days, months, whatever, down the line, it'll suddenly click and be like, this was the thing you should have did for this. And, in my case, it's, you know, it's problematic because, you know, a year or so ago, a previous job I had like 6, 7, 10 years ago, something popped into my head, like, was like, oh no, this was the thing that you were trying to figure out. And it's like, well, that's nice, but I haven't worked there in 6 years. Can we just put that on the back burner and pretend it doesn't exist more, please? Like, but no, I know exactly what you're meaning. And like, that's, yeah, you know, having, I think that kind of feeds directly into why downtime or turning off from, like, from work or what have you is always highlighted as an important thing. Cause, like, as you find, you know, you're just healthier, like, mentally healthier when you aren't stressing about one stupid little thing for like a month and running your head against the wall. And like, when it's done, especially as a programmer, when it's done and it works and you can see it works immediately, one, the relief that it's done is great, but also that dopamine hit is a fantastic thing to be able to go, I'm good, it's perfect, I can walk away from this, you know. For me, at least, that was always the big thing, was, you know, something working, I bang my head against the dopamine, the endorphin rush of going, oh yeah, I did it, I'm happy now.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing as well is it's, you never know where your inspiration is going to come. It's, I mean, I find, like, if I'm driving, sometimes something will just, it will pop into my head, this, you know, something I've been thinking about, and it's like, oh, that's, if I try it this way, that'll be good. you know, or this is the solution, or, I mean, you will probably relate to this, but I sometimes find that my best place to have this kind of inspiration is when I am sitting on the toilet, because I've got the brain just wanders, and then bang, it's like there's a solution that was right in front of me, and let me just hope I can get out of here before I forget it, and then go and write it down, because I don't take my phone into the toilet. No. So I have to remember it until I get out, and then go and write it down, or then go and implement it, or and see how it goes. Yeah, it's these kind of things. It's like when I was way back coding on the Commodore 64, it was that there was some instructions like pushing and pulling off the stack I wasn't too familiar with, and I had inspiration not on the toilet, on the way back from the pub one night, and I thought, that's how to use it. And then I tried it, and it worked, and I used it afterwards.
So I think the impressive thing to hear there is the is that alcohol really does help programmers. And I think it's an old, I don't know if this is an old actual joke or if it was something that came about from something, but there's always been the joke that a certain blood alcohol level is like the peak performance level for programmers. And, you know, what you just said, there might be some merit to it, that, you know, there's a peak performance level after you've had a few drinks to figure things out.
Yeah, I mean, it's I would definitely say that there has been times where I've had a few beers, and, you know, obviously after a certain point, you know, when if you're lying on the floor, you know, with a bucket beside you, it doesn't really work. But if you are, you know, you're kind of nice and you've had a few and it feels nice and you can just sit and think, or you get the Xbox on and, you know, you're sitting playing away and it's like a light bulb goes on sometimes, and it's like, that's it. I better write this down or type it into my phone.
Yeah, exactly. I understand completely what you mean there. And, you know, it's, yeah, like that's the important thing, as I said, for rest in general, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it is better sometimes just to walk away from it for a while and then just, you know, think of something else. And sometimes it may just come to you. Or sometimes you have to go and get your math books out and learn a bit more trigonometry. But
you know, for some people, myself included, that is a very scary statement, to get your math book out and start learning more about trigonometry. Me personally, I have went out of my way to write large amounts of spreadsheets stuff just so I don't have to do the math. Myself, or, you know, spend like an hour Googling to see if there's already a thing set up, instead of probably doing what would have been a much quicker math problem separately. But, you know, if, you know, to each their own, and if you are good with math or capable, I am not capable. If you're capable of math, that's, you know, that's a fantastic thing if you are able to actually go and figure it out that way.
Well, that's actually one of my weak points. That's why I have the maths books. And also, you know, the internet is your friend as well. You can, you know, something, not literally a book, but you can go and find it online. And, you know, there might be like some kind of nice explanation of an algorithm that you could then use to modify to your situation. So, but I do have maths books in the house, and I'm proud to say, I suppose.
You know, like, I think in this, sorry, I was going to make a dumb joke, but no, like, yes, if, you know, yeah, 100%, if you make use of them, yeah, you should, it's always good to have them, right? Okay. I was going to make a dumb joke about having old mainframe books, but it would have been a very hard joke to sell. So I'll just give away the dumb punchline and we can move on from it.
I mean, it could have been hilariously funny. I mean, you don't know until you try.
You know, that is generally a fair statement to make when it comes to jokes. However, even as I was like gearing up to say it, the neural network in my brain, the path to making it, it was already crumbling. So I think it was falling apart even as it was starting.
A bit too niche, was it?
Yes, yeah, we'll go with that. Probably a bit too niche. Probably the narrow field of people that would laugh at it. Probably non-existent outside of, you know, people that are dumb like me.
Don't sell yourself short like that. Nobody is dumb. Everybody says silly things, but I don't regard anybody as dumb unless they prove otherwise. But I always err on the side of nobody is dumb until I know. So, I mean, it could have been hilariously funny. I mean, you might as well have tried it.
So I'll keep that in mind for the future, Robert. That is very kind words of encouragement to not sell yourself short, or in my case, not sell myself short. But, you know, thank you for those words of encouragement and confidence for other people as well that are listening. You know, maybe just go for it if you're ever standing in the face of something, and maybe it'll work out for you.
Yeah, because, I mean, what I found over life is you're not going to get anywhere if you don't open your mouth and speak up. You have to speak up, because nobody can read your mind, so...
You know, that is wonderful life advice in general. You know, like, so many problems can be actively resolved by just trying to talk them out. However, for anyone that might hear that and think, yes, that makes perfect sense, it's also, and this isn't meant to contradict what you're saying in any way, because I fully agree that, you know, speaking, trying to talk things out is great. Sometimes you gotta know when to cut your losses and know that when you try and do it, it has to go both ways, right? You have to have a receptive party that's also willing to speak their mind. Because if you don't, you're just gonna like butt heads with someone that might be too prideful or something to try and work it out, right?
But then again, sorry. You don't know until you ask. You can't. You should never assume what something going on in somebody else's head, because you could be wrong. It's ask, and it's if somebody, you know, bites your head off, then that's not your problem, that's their problem. But at least you've asked. I mean, you could ask somebody some what you think is a dumb question, and they could be waiting to, you know, to answer that kind of question. Maybe they wanted that kind of interaction. You know, it's like you could maybe have made yourself a new friend there, or a new ally, or, you know, these kind of things. You never know. It's as somebody that's more introverted, I mean, I'm definitely not the kind of person that can walk into a room and be the life and soul of the party. I am more, although I'm kind of waffling on just now, it's more, I tend to hold off until I have something that I feel is interesting to say. But then I also fall into that trap of what I might not find interesting, somebody else might. So I could be missing out just by overanalyzing, whereas I could just ask and everything could be fine.
So, Robert, thank you. I was going to say, you know, that is wonderful life advice. I thank you. I don't think I was expecting some good, solid life advice from this. And that's not a statement against you. That's a statement more against or more towards the topic of the podcast. But, you know, no, that's actually wonderful advice. I think that outside of games, especially that's fantastic that people, you know, and keep in mind that it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that life advice. You know, it's very on point, or very good to keep in mind that, you know, like you said, you never know until you try. And, you know, sometimes making assumptions about what the other person is thinking or what have you, you know, is gonna come back and kick you when, you know, if you just open your mouth, you might find that everyone can be on the same page, or even maybe in the same book, instead of being all over the place, right?
Yeah. I mean, this to go full circle, you should have told your joke. It could have been hilarious. But in general, it's when you're working in teams and things, it's a kind of handy thing to have. I mean, we're I won't go any more into it. It's just more that it's like, you know, it's like learning these kind of people skills. It's important, you know, especially as you get older. You know, it's the days of, you know, I better not say that in case, you know, somebody, you know, insults me or something. You know, at my age, these days are, you know, more or less gone. If somebody insults me, then it's like, it's their problem, not mine. So,
you know, yes, just to add on to that as we're walking away from it. Yes, also being able to read the room is also important, you know, kind of like you said, you know, knowing the team and everything. But at the same time, you know, having a thicker skin about it, or learning how to develop a thicker skin is always also good, right? You know, because throwaway comments from people are sometimes not meant to be anything more than just a statement, right? You know, knowing how to read the room, but also having a thicker skin, a more wonderful life advice. Thank you, Robert.
You're welcome.
So, you know, on the topic, you know, in the direction of life advice, I guess, as we have been slowly stepping a little further away from games, I think it's a good time for me to, you know, to broach this subject. And outside of games, outside of playing games or making games or what have you, what is it that you do to relax? Like, how do you, you know, what do you enjoy doing? And, you know, by all means, if those things do intertwine with games, by all means, you know, you can speak to that. But just, you know, in general, what do you do to relax? Like, how do you relax? Or I'm waffling, as you put it, I'm trying to ask that question.
Well, I do play games. It's like, my Saturday night relaxation will be a couple of cans of beer, and maybe my go-to game for the last couple of years has been Left 4 Dead 2. So I'll go into some servers I've been going to regularly over the last couple of years, you know, speak to some online people that I have been chatting to for a number of years, and sometimes I'll just, you know, read the local, you know, read the news, you know, or just have a see where my surfing travels take me. You know, I keep on meaning to dig my bike out the garage and before the weather gets worse, go and cycle places and re-explore Glasgow that I've, it seems to have changed a lot since I went to France and came back. So there's a lot more to see. But, you know, it's, I have my boxes of unpacked boxes of electronics for my other hobby that I've mentioned before. But really, it's, at my age, my life is not boring, but it's more settled. It's like working, gaming, a couple of beers at the weekend, go and visit family sometimes, you know, keep on telling myself I need to go out on my bike and then it will rain or I need to do something else and I don't do it, which is bad procrastination, because that's another thing of life advice. Sitting at a computer all day is not healthy. If you've got a bike, use it. And I don't know, what else do I do? It's, sometimes I just sit and relax, do some reading. You know, sometimes you just need to switch off from the computer, switch off from the day job and just relax a bit. And I don't know, just watch some TV sometimes, as simple as that. Put some music on. It's, I don't know, it just depends how the day falls. It's,
So, you know, thank you for that. And yeah, I understand what you're saying. And, you know, I think, because I've been asking this question, this is at this point, I don't want to say it's a newer question. It's been around for a good handful. And I think, you know, a common theme that I've found with some people is, you know, it's hard to, because, and by all means, it's not a question that's meant to, like, make you want to sell what you do to relax, right? And I think one of the things people have potential trouble with, and I don't blame them, I probably would too, if you know, if I'm not the one that wrote it, right, is the mindset of, like, you, in your mind, when you're answering a question like that, you realize that it's just your life, right? And sometimes it's hard to answer because you're like, well, this feels it feels or sounds mundane, right? I don't mean that in an insulting way or a negative way. It's just like, you know, if I was asked, I would say it's all mundane stuff that I do myself. But like, that always is going to change from person to person. But at the same time, not really, because like, you know, at the end of the day, the people making games are people, and like, yeah. So I'm just, sorry, I'm getting off track trying to just say that I understand why it's a little difficult to like put into words, because it's, you know, it's just what you do, and like, you know, we get into our routine, kind of like you said, you know, when you can, you know, have a few drinks or what have you, a few beers and all that, like that's just, it's what you do, right?
Yeah. I mean, if I was a millionaire, then maybe I would fly, you know, jet off to, you know, Monaco for the weekend or something like that, but I'm not, so I have to do what everybody else does, I assume.
You know, it's such a wild thing to me to hear, like just to fly off to like another country, only because, you know, I think in general, North Americans, we get tunnel visioned to like, you know, you look at Canada, you look at America, the United States, like we look at that and like the countries are huge. And then, you know, people in, you know, Europe in general are just like, oh yeah, I just jumped over to this country. You know, it was only a few hours away or what have you. And like, it's always jarring to hear such a throwaway statement like that, because like, in my case, I could drive for an hour and end up in the United States, but like that's to a little tiny town on the other side of the border. That's nothing special. It's, you know, it's a border crossing, right? Yeah. So, sorry, just hearing the statement, I could have, you know, jumped off to Monaco for the weekend or whatever, is just, it's always amusing to me because it snaps me out of my tunnel vision of, oh yeah, like Europe exists in this wonderful place where you can easily explore and go other places if that is what you choose to do, right?
Yeah. I mean, I could take a plane and in 3 hours be in the middle of Central Europe, and then that would include like Germany, Switzerland, you know, Austria, these kind of places. So it's in that respect. But then again, in America, you could go to different states, which are technically like different countries, aren't they?
I imagine this statement might catch some flack from some people, and that's perfectly fair because it's rife to catch flack. I will not try and deny or hide from that. But like, if I were to jump on a plane for 3 hours, I think I could end up in, you know, some cool places, or I could end up in a state that has less people than my city that I live in, you know, like end up in a state that has, you know, no people and it's just farmland kind of thing, or what have you. Flyover states they're referred to as, where it's just like there's nothing because it's, you know, it's there's just nothing.
You don't know, so there's like, nothing until you go. I mean, it could be like you could be find some interesting things. I mean, like I live in Scotland, so I know there's a lot of interesting things here, but some people might think Scotland, cold, wet, what's there? You know, Loch Ness Monster and that's it. But there's a whole lot more. There's, you know, some beautiful scenery. There's the highlands and islands. I mean, there's a lot of places in Scotland I haven't been. I've been to a lot of places because of previous jobs. But there's a lot of places I would still love to go to, like way, way up north where it's, you know, there is nobody about for miles, you know, and you just see fields of heather and bracken, and but there's some beautiful mountains in the background, and, you know, you can look out over the North Atlantic and these kind of things and just lose yourself and relax. And I mean, it's all very well going to Rome and seeing the Colosseum and things like that, but, you know, that's, you're doing something rather than just enjoying where you are. So, I mean, I've only been to America twice. Twice. I've been to New York twice. I've been to Florida. I've been to Vegas. Sorry, 3 times I've been to America then. But I've only seen those 3 places, and there's thousands and thousands of square miles that I haven't seen, which would be I think would be very nice to see, because I don't live there. When you live somewhere, it's easy to say there's nothing there, I think. Well, that's what I think other people would think.
You know, that's also a very fair thing. Like, you know, some people, you know, might not like or be as enticed by something like the prairies. And then other people very much might. And if, to explain this, not to, you know, speak down, just if you don't know the term prairies, because I don't know if that exists for really in like in Europe area. The prairies are generally like large, flat spans of land. Canada has like three provinces where it's like you can see, if you were to have house guests and you were, you know, going out to your driveway to see them off, you could wave for a day and a half because you could still see their car just slowly falling off the curvature of the earth, you know, because that's just how flat it is. So, you know, that's a good point. Some people might, you know, might turn their noses up or not be as enticed by the prairies, but other people very much well might. So, you know, that's also a good perspective to have. So, you know, again, thank you. More life advice on a gaming podcast from Robert.
I really am showing my age now. It's like, it's I'm not the most traveled person, but I have traveled. I mean, I've lived in Europe, I've lived in Scotland, I've been to quite a few countries. So it's, I don't know, it's, plus I'm probably also, it's something to talk about rather than having awkward silences, you know. And I'm not meaning it to come across as life advice, it's just, it's flowing.
Well, you know, I don't think it's a negative thing. I know it's not. I don't mean it in any negative way when I say it's life advice, because, you know, it's, I think in today's world, struggling with a positive outlook can be very difficult, you know, for a whole swath of reasons, especially depending on like where or what you do. Like, for example, you know, and again, here's the thing that I remembered and, you know, kind of going back to, but you had mentioned, you know, writing, like when you make your games, working on things and learning the technologies you learned. But like in the gaming sphere right now, Unity is falling apart. And, you know, so when saying it's hard to see, sometimes it's hard to be positive or see, not negativity or be pessimistic or what have you. You know, when, if your industry is reliant, a large part of your industry is reliant on like Unity, for example, and it's falling apart, it clouds your vision. And, you know, the reason I say it's good life advice, you know, completely sincerely, is because sometimes just having someone enter something in that pierces that veil of clouded thought from everything else is always nice. Sorry, I'm trying to think of the best way to put it that's clear and concise, but it's always nice. So, you know, yeah, you know, it's like you said, it might not be intended as life advice or what have you, but I don't think injecting positivity into places where it could be brought down by negativity is bad, you know, if that makes any sense, what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, I completely get what you're saying. I mean, but even as far as Unity is concerned, I mean, they may be committing suicide at the moment, but there are other engines out there, so something new to learn. I mean, it's, if you've invested a lot of time, then, well, you know, one thing I learned from the French is they've got an expression, c'est la vie. I mean, such is life. I mean, these things happen. I mean, we have no control over them, so we just have to deal with them. If somebody wants to go along that path, then, you know, at some point somebody has made a decision and the management have made a decision that, that really, I mean, I don't understand it myself. I mean, did they really think it would fly, especially this retrospective thing, as far as I understand it? I mean, it's, I don't know, it's, but there is other engines out there. It's not a big thing, really. Apart from if you lose a you know, a year's work, but.
Yes, you know, I far be it from me to be versed or educated enough to speak much to it, so I'm not going to speak much more to it than you know, than this. But yes, I understand what you're saying, and yeah, like, you know, I realistically, you know, the best of luck for the people that were vested in it and are, you know, having to look at, make hard decisions coming up because Unity has decided to not shoot itself in the foot, but blow its own leg off and then go, well, we can still walk, right? But, you know, like I said, far be it from me, I'm not versed enough or educated enough, as I'm not a game developer. It's not something I've had to concern myself with, so I can't really speak much more to it than I wish everyone the best of luck in the fallout, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I'm not saying that there's other engines out there. I'm just saying it's, this is something that can be easily, you know, handled by, you know, a software house that, you know, can't agree to these new terms. I mean, it's, there's probably going to, there's going to be a lot of, probably a lot of heartache at the moment, you know, going on, and a lot of hard decisions to be made. But these are, it's back to something you have no control over. It's, they'll either reverse course and try and salvage, I would say, whatever goodwill they have left, or they will carry on and, you know, the Unity will just no longer be used. I mean, it's like, I mean, I had a Betamax video and VHS one, you know, these things happen.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. It's, you know, it'll be a hard time as everyone adjusts, unfortunately. But, you know, once it's all through, hopefully we're in a healthy place again. And, you know, what have you. So, Robert, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I do want to, you know, let you get on with your Saturday morning or afternoon at this point. Sorry. However, if there is anything else you want to discuss, you know, like a cool game, what you're doing, something you feel more people should just be more aware of, by all means, the floor is yours. As well, please feel free to let everyone know where, if they want to learn more about you, they can learn more about you. And I'll be sure to put that stuff in the episode description.
Really nothing. I do have a website, but it's not been updated for years. It's had some of my tinkerings on, so I don't think I'll bother with that. Just thank you very much, and I can't really think of anything. That's one of the most difficult questions you've asked me this afternoon.
You know,
I'm prepared for it.
You know, I'm not gonna lie. I like to make the joke that most of my questions are softball questions. I'm particularly amused that in all of today that is, you know, I think you're the first that has been the hardest question for them. How to self-promote.
Well, I could say, I mean, my website is CaptainDeath.com, but there's nothing much on it. It's not been updated much. I do have another website which has got, it's basically got a holding page on it. What else? There is a... No, I mean, I'm not really at the point where self-promotion is really an issue at the moment. It's, you know, if I do develop my own games that I would like to do as a sideline, then, you know, I'd love to come back on and do some self-promotion. But at the moment, I am working on Kingpin, and that's my priority. So, and I think that's about it. I am waffling.
So I completely understand what you're saying. And I will say this. This kind of makes sense, because before we spoke, I did try and, like, learn a little bit about you and see what I could find. But, you know, I'm going to assume that since you didn't say you have, like, where your, what your Twitter handle is or what have you, that you don't have Twitter, which also makes it harder to find, explains why I was having a hard time finding you on Twitter if you don't have Twitter. That's what I was meaning by, you know, in the hard, like, it's why it's, I'm used to this with the hardest question, just because at this point in I don't want to say in life, but just this point in time, kind of, it's, I don't mean this in a negative way. I just realize it can come off that way. It's always shocking when someone doesn't have social media.
I do have a Twitter account. I just don't use it, and it's not under Captain Death. It's under, like, more my sort of company name that I made up. But it's more or less, it was just, it's part because a couple of other companies, particularly just a couple of French ones, they seem to like the name, and so they've kind of grabbed it. So, you know, they've grabbed, like, a version with, like, different letters in it at the end, you know, or, like, I think one's, was it an underscore? One's, like, got an S at the end. And it's actually, like, Gyrocorp, G-Y-R-O-C-O-R-P, and that was from my old CB handle, which I had way, way, way back. I had a CB radio. And one of my names was the Gyro Captain, and that's from Mad Max 2. So that's why Gyrocorp. So it was short and sweet, and but lots of people like to steal it, and gyros are also something to do with kebabs, and they're also something to do with the flight controllers. So it's, I've never used it because I do have another company name that I may switch to, but since I don't have anything to show at this point, you know, anything independent, then I haven't bothered. I'll get around to it one day.
You know, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, as someone else who has to constantly deal with the French, sorry, I say that, I should be careful not to say it with such disdain, being a French Canadian living near the border of Quebec where the French people are. As, again, as a French Canadian, but as someone who has to deal with the French, I completely understand. I, you know, years ago when Gmail first opened up, I my email was set up, and it's a generic kind of like French word, right? Because it's the family name kind of thing. And the amount of people that have just tried to steal it, and when I say steal, I mean, like, I've gotten people signing up to school, like colleges and universities with my email, like the official sign up attempts, where like I've been sent the "you've been accepted" letters kind of thing, and not just like spam stuff. You know, I can understand the what you're going through when like. Other when French companies especially try and use it, because, you know, or any other language company or what have you, because it comes in and it's like, well, Google says you've been accepted. That's fantastic for you. You're not going to get this email because this came to me. Delete, you know, like, as bad as it is to say, I just delete all those emails, but, you know, I don't care if someone's been approved for their financing for their car in like some place in like France or what have you. Like, it's, you know, I'm not going to track them down. That's not my problem.
But that could be the scam, though. I mean, I did have to grab Facebook as well because of this particular French company. Something... I won't mention what they are because it's not really relevant, but it's not what they are as in an insult, what they actually do. And it's kind of weird why they've picked this name, you know, the Gyrocorp, or why they tried to. And then there was another one. What was it? Electric wheelchairs or something? I don't know why. they even stole, you know, on my holding page in my website, it's like they even stole the capital C and the capital G. I mean, it was a blatant ripoff. And it, but I've got the domain name, I've got the Facebook, I've got the Twitter, I've got various other social medias I won't mention because there's a few of them. And but yeah, they're all unused at the moment.
And, you know, that's fair enough why you wouldn't want to promote those or throw them out there, right? If you don't use them, you don't use them. It's like, you know, my pseudo personal Twitter that I don't use. I don't put it out there, and I don't blame you for not wanting to do the same with your non-existent the one you don't use, right? Like, you know, in the future, yes, it makes perfect sense. So I understand now. So thank you for the, you know, walking through that.
Yeah, the waffling through that more like.
So, Robert, As I said, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So if there wasn't anything else, I will let you get on with your Saturday.
Yes, well, thank you very much for hosting me, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
You know, Robert, you are more than welcome. You know, I appreciate you making the time. Like, it's always, you know, I'm always happy to just get to speak with people. So yeah, you know, you're more than welcome for hosting. Happy to have you, I think is the way to phrase that one. I struggle with how to answer that sometimes.
Well, thank you very much. It's been fun, and it's been interesting because this is the first time I've ever done this, so a new life experience to go full circle.
So, you know, hopefully if you do it again, hopefully I will not ever be, if you do this again, hopefully I will not be the worst of them. That's a very weird way to say I hope you have worse, I hope you don't have better experiences of podcasts in the future. I realize after saying it. But what I'm saying is, I hope this didn't ruin it. I hope I'm not the again. No, I don't know why I'm trying to like crap on other podcasts potentially that don't exist or haven't happened yet.
Well, time will tell. But it's but I've had a fun time. It's I don't think I'll be saying at any point in the future that that Link was. Well, how should I say? Not good to be on.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words then. I think that's the better way to say it. Instead of telling people, hopefully I'm not the podcast that ruins them, just thank them for enjoying, you know, for their kindness and move on.
Yeah, but that's not to say that once I hear it, I might think, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. My Glasgow accent's too strong, or I waffle too much, or... You know, it's like, why didn't I go and wash the car instead? You know.
So, Robert, I'll say this before I let you go, and this is something I can definitely speak to because I edit all of these episodes, right? You know, I don't do a lot of editing. I want to be very clear. But you know, I listen to all of these episodes, you know, before putting them out there, and I have not had issues with the people I've spoken with. All of the criticisms that I typically pull back are things that I say, I could have done this better, or, oh, I didn't catch them saying this, and that would have been interesting to follow up on. So if you listen to it and you think the same thing, that I think is just how it works. You know, being able to say, oh, I could have did this better. And if you're someone that is typically seeking self-improvement, I don't think that's a bad thing to do, but I will say, don't be too critical on yourself during it, because all you'll do is defeat yourself and make you not want to try to do more, right? Like, you got to be careful not to go to the extreme end where all you do is hurt yourself. That's where I'm trying to go with that.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit and ruminate about what we spoke about, and it will be what it will be. I just hope it's my accent comes across okay. That's the thing I'm most worried about, that sometimes I may have slipped into my more, you know, kind of broader Glasgow accent, and people might not have understood everything I said. Or that I was boring. No, I don't want to be boring.
So,
but I won't ruminate on either of them.
You know, I wouldn't worry about any of that. I had fun getting to speak with you here. I hope the people that are listening right now also had fun getting to speak with you. Sorry, getting to listen to you speak. They're not here speaking to you. But I wouldn't worry about it too much. I'm, as you said, it'll be what it'll be, and I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. And it's a new life experience, so even in that respect alone, it's good.
Awesome.
And it was lovely to speak to somebody new and be allowed to waffle on about this and that and the next thing.
Exactly. So, you know, as I said, Robert, I think that's a good place to end it if there's nothing else to speak to. And I'll let you get off your Saturday.
Yep. And thank you very much again, and hope we speak soon.
So thanks again to Robert for making time to have this conversation with me, and thank you for joining us on the Red Tunic podcast, as well as a special thanks to Ronald Jenkins for the use of music from the title track from Roads Deep. And be sure to check out the episode descriptions for links to socials, websites, and other means that will allow you to learn more about or support Robert or the Project Kington and the podcast. While you're doing that, also be sure to like, follow, and be sure to share if those you think might also enjoy it. Thanks. Till next time.